Hello there. Welcome to the show. You're listening to Cast Erebus, and my name is Christian Corley. Cast your minds back, if you would, to 2012. It's going back a bit, isn't it? But we were podcasting back then. Myself, James McLean, and Brian Terranova was with us regularly at that point. And on the 25th of March 2012, we released an episode about The Eternity Clock, a new Doctor Who video game. Now, I'll take this from the listing, because it's still true. The history of Doctor Who video games is littered with good intentions, but sadly along the way there have been many disappointments. With the release of Doctor Who The Eternity Clock, BBC Worldwide hoped to push the concept beyond the disappointment of Return to Earth, or Dalek Attack even. But what will it take? Well, featuring, as we did that week, an interview with BBC Worldwide Simon Harris, myself, James McLean, and Brian discussed Doctor Who video games such as Destiny of the Doctors and Doctor Who the Adventure Games that had appeared a few years earlier, courtesy of the BBC. This week's podcast is going to start off with a return to that original interview with Simon Harris about Doctor Who the Eternity Clock. After that, I've got a very special interview for you with David Bailey, also known as David Breyer, who wrote the script for Doctor Who, The Eternity Clock. And, you know, he's got 10 years distance on this game. So it's a good opportunity to look back at it, see what works, see what didn't work, and maybe a bit more than that. So first of all, here is Simon Harris.
Without giving away too many details, because obviously part of the fun of this being like an interactive episode is watching the Doctor and River puzzle it all out. Hmm. I mean, the fundamental thing is it opens with the Doctor in the TARDIS on his own, and suddenly the TARDIS is pulled into this time maelstrom. Everything's going mad. The TARDIS is fighting for control, crashes on Earth, realizes that there's this massive time maelstrom which is pulling holes in time, and it's encompassing the whole of the Earth. So he then does what the Doctor does. He walks out the door of the TARDIS to find out what's going on, and that's where the game starts. This story is about the Doctor and River, because the TARDIS basically phones River, so she's in Stormcage, as we know she is at certain times in her time period, and she breaks out of Stormcage, so the player gets to do that with River, and then joins up with the Doctor to help him and find out what's going on. And this story is very much about River and the Doctor piecing together what is causing this problem with time, and then how they reset it, because the Doctor very quickly works out, well, hold on, it's London in the present day, the Cybermen haven't invaded, they haven't been converting people, the Daleks haven't devastated Earth in the future, in the Victorian times, the Silurians didn't poison the entire world, so both A, what is giving them the power and the motivation to do that, and B, how do we stop it and reset the time streams correctly. And then I'll give one big hint, which is the Eternity Clock is actually way more powerful than they originally anticipate, and that actually we find out that the Eternity Clock is rewriting chunks of time. There's a great cutscene where River realizes that actually entries in her diary have changed, and she doesn't remember writing them, and that's how badly that this thing is playing with time. As we've said in some of the press releases, this is planned as the first, it's a self-controlled story, but it's part of a longer arc that we hope to build out. So by the end of this, they've got some ideas, but there's a much bigger thing afoot.
So we've got a big overarching plot.
Okay. There's a good cliffhanger.
And with what we're talking about in terms of progressing the game forward for the future years and everything, is that based on how well the Eternity Clock does?
Fundamentally, you know, whenever you do something creative like this, you've got to give it to the fans, and you know, we've got to be judged. So people are going to review it, and people are going to choose to buy it or not. So you know, if we're on the, we're very, very happy. We feel we're hitting a higher quality level than we've ever hit with a Doctor Who release before, both in terms of technology and just the way it feels like a real Doctor Who episode, and the way that the gameplay is integrated into that. But we now have to finish it up, release it, and then we will be judged on that. And hopefully we've got really, really big plans, and hopefully if people agree with us and this is successful, then we'll get to realise those.
Okay. In terms of plans, I know you won't be able to tell me anything at all, and that's fine. But what we've got next year is 2013, which is obviously 50 years of Doctor Who on television.
Yep.
So in terms of that, there's going to be a lot of celebrations on screen, a lot of celebrations off screen. So are you planning to, if everything goes to plan, planning to kind of inaugurate the celebration to a game?
So I think there's a couple of things there just on a wider scope. So the first thing is obviously we do have our browser-based MMO, Doctor Who Worlds in Time. So I'm sure that we will be doing specific stuff around the 50th anniversary. It's too big of an event in the Doctor Who world. As to how, I will say that we do have plans around Eternity Clock that would tie into the 50 years of Doctor Who. I'm sure that we will be doing specific stuff around the 50th anniversary. It's too big of an event in the Doctor Who world. As to how, I will say that we do have plans around Eternity Clock that would tie into the 50 years of Doctor Who. I think one of the opportunities you have in gaming is to do things that are challenging to do in a TV environment. And so that's why we work very closely with the team down in Cardiff to ensure that we can go behind the curtain a little bit. Whereas the TV show, they land on a planet and they look and then they rush off and go over there. We can do things like give the player the opportunity to go left instead of right with the Doctor. And so, we work with them about how we can do things within the Doctor Who world that give players and fans bigger experiences.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And in terms of the game itself with the Eternity Clock, we've got Daleks, we've got Cybermen, we've got Silurians, the Silence as well.
Yes.
So what was the, in terms of choosing them, what was the kind of thinking behind that? Was that something you said, right, these are who we want to be in it in terms of monsters?
Yeah, well, so interestingly, initially enough, the very first pitch actually had one different monster. But when we pitched this originally, the Silence hadn't been shown on TV. And so we sat down and we pitched us and they said, well, we have this new monster that's just about to be shown in, because the first part of Series 6 was just about to be shown. Could you incorporate that into the game? So we actually pulled one of the original monsters out and put the Silence in. And that had really great ramifications, because we had to work out how we integrated the whole aspect of them about if you lose sight of them, you forget everything. And we actually think we've got a great mechanic with the way that weaves into the game, where you have to follow them around and keep them in sight. Otherwise you get reset because you forget all about them. So we started off with just the goal of bringing some really classic Doctor Who monsters to life, replicating what's been done in the recent series. And then, as I say, the Cardiff and the brand team said, can you bring the Silence into the game as well?
Okay.
So we did.
You know the plans for the future. I guess the last question I'd have is, we've got these two games coming out. Well, the one game coming out, one on PlayStation 3, one on Vista. I mean, just not to take up too much time, were there any major pitfall differences between the two platforms? Is anyone going to want to buy, say, or download one more than the other?
No, there's not any major differences. I mean, the one fundamentally different feature is the Vita is single player only, whereas the PlayStation 3 has the two player co-op mode. And I think, in line with Sony's message about Vita, which it's console quality gaming on the move, one of the unique features we're putting in Vita is what we call continuation play. So you save your game on the PlayStation. If you own both versions, you save your game on the PlayStation 3, you can then load that save game from the cloud on your Vita and continue to play it on the move, save it again, it saves to the cloud, you continue it back at home on your PlayStation 3.
Brilliant.
So you don't need two separate play games. We do also have another unique Vita feature, which is we're using Near, which is their GPS system. So there's a whole game about leaving Doctor Who medals in physical locations. So you geotag a location, and then people can actually come and collect them. So we're hoping the Doctor Who community will start tagging locations and swapping stuff.
That would be very interesting.
There's a whole aspect, and that's unique to the Vita version, obviously, because you can't carry a PlayStation 3 around to do that. So I think, I'm obviously hoping people get both versions. They are the same game. I mean, the visual quality, I think, is amazing on Vita. It's really impressive.
Simon Harris was interviewed there by former Casterbras contributor Mez Burdett. Okay, so this bit is quite exciting for me, because it's the first interview we've done in a very long time on our podcast. Big thanks to Gareth Cavanagh, who was one of the people who helped me track down David Bailey, who also writes as David Breyer. He was the scriptwriter on Doctor Who, The Eternity Clock, the game we've just been discussing there with Simon Harris. Of course, Simon there was speaking 2012. This conversation was recorded in 2022, been in the editing suite for quite a while, this podcast. But here is myself speaking with David Bailey. Joining me now is David Bailey, who writes under the name of David Breyer. Many years ago, David was involved with a Doctor Who video game called The Eternity Clock. You were involved with Doctor Who and Big Finish before that, weren't you?
Yes. For many years, doing all sorts of bits and bobs. I had been doing a lot of writing for Doctor Who magazine. Big Finish-wise, I'd done a couple of... two or three Bernice Summerfield audios. Mm-hmm. Latterly, some Blake 7 and Pathfinder stuff as well for them. And yeah, that kind of... It was through knowing Gary Russell at Big Finish, who obviously has his fingers in all Doctor Who pies.
Yeah.
the people who were making Eternity Clock approached him looking for someone to work on it. And at that time... I had just done a Doctor Who kids book for Penguin, for BBC Books at Penguin. I think I was just at the front of Gary's mind because that had been very recent. And so he put me forward and yeah, it just went from there.
Now, back in 2012, I think it was, Simon Harris described your script as a good script with a strong plot.
I'll take that. I mean, the plot was the... In fairness, a lot of the ideas for the plot were driven by the game and by its producer, Nick Dixon.
Well, what I wanted to ask you was how much the concept was yours and how much was in the brief.
It was terribly collaborative, actually. It was a lot more collaborative than I was expecting it to be. It was the first kind of gaming script I'd done.
Right.
I mean, I've played video games a lot, too much. So I understood the field, and I knew people who'd written video games before, so I kind of knew what to expect about the work, in the work. But, yeah, it was a lot more collaborative than I expected. I joined the project, I suppose, quite early on, and there was Nick had a rough framework of what the levels were going to be, and all the bits and pieces, like the Sonic Screwdriver minigame, and all the kind of puzzle bits. And I would sit there, day to day, I would sit there in the studio with the level designers, going through it bit by bit, just taking notes as to what was happening, and then I'd have to go away and write little snippets of dialogue for, not the cutscene stuff, but the actual, while you were actually playing the game, the things that NPCs might say, that the Doctor or River might say as they're just running around.
Sure.
So that was kind of the process. And as that was going on, we were kind of developing together the story that linked it all, the cutscene stuff, what the Eternity Clock was. And so how much of it was mine? Probably about 30 to 40%. But a lot of... the development work for the story had been done before I even got there. Nick had big ideas for it, as did Simon, and as did I eventually. when I was brought on board. it's funny because it was so long ago now. Since you got in touch, I've been trying to. Like reorder the experience of it in my mind and remember what was what and what happened when, and so this kind of stuff is, like I said, because it was so collaborative, at least that's how it felt to me. I do find it very hard to separate my contribution to the writing side of it from everyone else's.
I had a go at playing it, as I mentioned, and this is not the first time I've played it, and I'm pretty sure I got to exactly the same point where there's a point where the Cybermen are chasing the Doctor and River song through the
London Underground, and there's like a challenge with a computer, and there's one of the puzzle bits, and I didn't turn the puzzles off this time, and I didn't turn the puzzles off the previous time I tried it either, and I'm still stuck at the same thing, which is so frustrating. I took the time to have a look at the cutscenes, which someone has kindly put together on YouTube, and to see how it kind of develops. And what I noticed is that the lot of the, well, all of the dialogue, it felt utterly natural for both of the characters. It felt like it'd been lifted from TV. So
thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, absolutely full marks there. as if you need me to offer you full marks. But no, it fits perfectly and it sits there beautifully, I think. So was that something that you spent a lot of time at? Did you like bomb Doctor Who with Matt Smith and Alex Kingston, or is it something you absorbed naturally?
Well, I mean, I was very immersed in that era of the show anyway. Right. My writing career at Doctor Who magazine transitioned from just general feature stuff to actual set visits and things right at the end of David Tennant's reign. It was the next Doctor was the first set visit I did.
Okay.
And then Tom, who was editor at the time, Tom Spilsbury, had me very involved in over the Matt Smith years. I did lots of set visits and interviews. I had, you know, I had all the scripts way ahead of time. And obviously I've been a Doctor Who fan all my life. So, and I've written, you know, fan fiction since I was a teenager and things like that. So yeah, I'm very steeped in Doctor Who. So, I mean, yes, I suppose on one level, it just did come naturally, just writing that kind of dialogue. On another, it's a tricky thing because having written Blake 7 for Big Finish, what you want to do is you don't want to pastiche it. You don't want to just use all the cliches you hear, like Geronimo or whatever, things like that, and stitch them all together. It has to, you have to walk that line between copying and using that as a springboard for, I'm not explaining this very well, but just, you can't just go in there and just ape the TV stuff, because right, that sure. just won't, it won't be good. I don't know, like I said, I'd just written this Doctor Who kids book, The Web in Space, it's called, and that was the 11th Doctor and Amy and Rory. And so I suppose that helped oil the wheels. I was, you know, that had warmed me up.
Yeah.
But then that makes it sound like that wasn't a particularly good example of it. Whereas that's exactly what the licensors were saying about that, was that, you know, I'd got the voice of the TV series. I think it's interesting, actually. Stephen Moffat has a very particular way of writing. His characters are quick-witted, particularly River, snappy, and they like throwing out one-liners. So that's kind of the kind of thing you keep in mind, instead of actually looking for the one-liners that Stephen has written and lifting them and using them yourself. You think, no, all right, I want a one-liner that sounds like it might have been written by Stephen.
Sure.
So that's what you have to go for. And in a wider sense, the plot, when Nick and I were discussing the plot for The Eternity Clock and for the things we hoped to do after that, we wanted it to feel like a Stephen Moffat plot. Big, timey-wimey, epic, all that kind of stuff.
Yes, yes.
So again, it's that kind of thing you think you want it to feel like a Stephen Moffat thing, but not just be a photocopy of a Stephen Moffat thing.
Yeah. I'm just looking at Web in Space. There appears to be an entire range of Doctor Who novels that I didn't know existed.
Yes, they were aimed at 9-10-year-old boys specifically, reluctant readers.
Right.
Chapter books they were.
So there's yours, Web in Space. There's Horror of the Space Snakes by Gary Russell and Extra Time by Richard Dunworth.
Yeah, I think Steve Lyons did one as well.
Oh, right.
Yeah. It was fun. I liked doing them. I mean, they didn't make a big splash. Like I said, they weren't Have any Doctor Who books made a big splash in recent years? I don't think so. Certainly not.
I think
these
the last
ones,
one
anyway.
Was probably the one. Oh, I used to have this on my shelf, and I don't know. There's the big sci-fi names were doing one
yeah.
book, and there was one,
yeah.
the one by a name I should remember the name of, which was a third Doctor book with a Master in it and Joe. I think that was probably.
Was that the Stephen Baxter? No. I know Stephen Baxter. Did Stephen Baxter do one?
I think Stephen Baxter did one, yeah, but it wasn't that one. It was. I can't remember who it was now. Oh, that's so frustrating. But back on this range, there's The Water Thief by Jack Rayner and Terminal of Despair by Steve Lyons, as you said.
Hmm.
Yeah, they completely passed me by, which is quite unusual because.
I mean, they're fun little books. They'll take you a couple of hours to read, I think.
Yeah. I don't think I've ever seen them anywhere either, which is...
Well, yeah, like I said, they didn't really make a big splash. No. I think they were firmly aimed at kids.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, well, something to look out for. back to the game, back to the Eternity Clock. I think you've kind of covered my next question, which was, I was thinking that writing dialogue for a video game, and I kind of know the answer to this already because I've spoken to other writers. It's vaguely, or generally speaking, a sort of a mix of plot dialogue and character success / failure exclamations in during levels.
That stuff is it's difficult. It's not, but it's how many different ways can you say? I'm sure other computer game writers you've spoken to have said the same kind of thing. But yeah, how many different ways can you say, "Ow, that hurt," or "I need to get round that corner," or whatever, you know. It's part of the job. That's just what you've got to get on and do. God bless the actors as well. They've got to sit there and...
do all of those, yeah.
Yeah. that was an interesting thing, actually. like I said, this was my first gig in gaming scripts. And also, like I said, I knew other people who'd written for games before. And very early on, Nick had, you know, we were talking about the actual process of how I'd provide the scripts. And Nick had said basically that they use Excel because then, you know, you can go to a particular cell in Excel and that line, you can tell all the programmers, the sound guys, everyone involved in the game, oh, you want to go to cell B15. And it's just easier for them to organise it.
Yeah.
But I knew. I don't want to make them sound like they were precious, because they absolutely were not. But I knew that people like Matt and Alex Kingston, you can't sit them down in front of an Excel spreadsheet and ask them to figure out what this scene is. So I said to Nick, really, we need to do this in a format they'd, you know, recognise as a script.
Yeah.
So I got what I got really lucky, because I didn't have to mess around with Excel. I just wrote in Final Draft, basically. But all the lines you're talking about, all those barks, they call them, I didn't write them in Excel. I think I just wrote them in Word, just line after line.
That begs the question, was someone then given the job of copying all those lines into Excel?
Yeah, probably somewhere. It may have been Nick. I don't know who did, but it wasn't me. I know that we in Final Draft, the script writing software I was using, you can number the lines. So I just said, oh, we could just do that. So then at least they had some kind of reference, but it still looked like a script for Matt and Alex.
Okay. you said you'd played some other games in your time. Have you played any of the Doctor Who games?
Oh, crikey. I know I will have played Destiny of the Doctor way back when. That's because Gary wrote that.
Yeah,
that was the one with the Anthony Ainley in it.
Yes, it's wonderful. Well, those bits are wonderful.
You can't talk about Doctor Who games without saying that kind of thing, can you?
Not really, no.
It's sad. I mean, when the Eternity Clock was released and you know, you don't want to read reviews, but you crack, you do read reviews.
Yeah.
I felt really bad for it because the everyone I worked with was really into it, and I think we all had a realistic impression of, you know, what the game was. It wasn't some AAA Call of Duty.
No, no.
Whatever. But it got a bit of a drubbing, really.
It's a platform adventure, isn't it? And
yeah, with puzzles.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I'm all right, Jack, because most of the reviews said the writing's great, but the rest of it, not so much. I was like, all right, okay. But yeah, sorry, back to your question. I don't think beyond that. I think way, way back in the 80s, I might have played... What was that Dalek one?
Dalek Attack?
Yeah, I have a vague memory of playing that.
That was on the Amiga and the Commodore 64 on the Spectrum.
Yeah, would have been the Commodore 64, I think.
Well, the reason I asked because the gentleman I do most of my podcast with is a chap called James McLean. He used to be an artist and illustrator. And he worked on the Wii Doctor Who game, whose name escapes me at the moment. And that formed a lot of material for us back in the day. But what I recall from that is that the game that he joined was very different to the game that was published. And what I was wondering was there any part of the game lost, or did it change significantly during the development from your point of view while you were involved?
That's a good question. I know we lost some minutes for cutscenes. The budget was altered for that at one point during production, which I didn't like, but then of course I wouldn't. But I don't... I mean, fundamentally, it was... Yeah, I can't think that it changed significantly.
Okay.
Do you know what? Sorry. I've got the original development document.
Oh.
Yeah, Elizabethan. Stormcage, Elizabethan Earth, Victorian Earth, and present day. And that's what was in the game. So, no, I don't remember it significantly changing. And I think that's because this... I actually don't know how long Nick was working on this document before I joined, but he had a very clear... You look at this and you see... He had a very clear idea of what he wanted it to be.
Sure.
And so it stuck to that.
I know that this was intended to be a series.
Yeah.
And as I say, I haven't managed to complete the game yet, so I looked at the cutscenes, and the final cutscene appears to be a cliffhanger.
Yeah.
Have you had any plans to take that away with you in a different direction? Maybe what happens next?
We had one of them. Yeah, I mean, we'd after the production on the first game was pretty much wrapped up. Production was beginning on what would have been the first DLC for it.
All right.
And like I said, as someone who plays games quite avidly anyway, it was interesting. You hear a lot of people complain that, you know, DLC is just cut content from the original game. Hmm. So it was interesting to see that from the inside and see that, nope, this is how I always thought it was. This is what they always said it was. You know, they finished one thing and now they're moving on to the next. So, yeah, I wrote a few scenes for it. I know we had the story all laid out. Nick and I had a big disagreement. No, sorry, that made it sound like a big argument. We had a fundamental disagreement about the villain, just the gender of the villain. I wanted it to be a woman, and Nick did not like that. He didn't feel we should be fighting with women, basically. Concept art had been done. I think Nick had done a kind of framework of the very first levels. What you're going to have to forgive me, my memory of the way the story exactly ends is very weak. But I remember this DLC would have been set in a kind of twisted version of the TARDIS. But it was quite soon after the release of the game, yeah, that was what's the word?
Nixed.
Canned.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, we had, like you said, it was planned to be a series. Simon, he may have spoken about this, I don't know. Simon was pitching to kind of the people who manage the Doctor Who brand to kind of do a cross-media kind of Eternity Clock thing. You know, so there would have been Eternity Clock comics and books.
Oh, right.
Who knows what else.
Don't think he mentioned that. He did say it's planned to be the first self-contained story, but it's part of a longer arc that we hope to build out. So they've got some big ideas for an overarching plot. There's a good cliffhanger.
Yeah. And that was, I mean, personally, that was the saddest thing about it, was that the stuff I had most worked on and most developed was all the stuff that would have come later.
Yeah.
Because like I said, Nick had pretty much kind of got the story in shape, so they had something to work on before I joined. But after that point, collaborating with Nick was brilliant, and we've collaborated on a couple of things since, nothing that has come to fruition, including another Doctor Who game in much more recent years, but it did not go anywhere, sadly. And so I really enjoyed collaborating with Nick, and it was a very... It was just a great imaginative process, bouncing ideas around with him for how the series should carry on. And so, yeah, I wrote this development document for Simon to pass around the bee, but nothing came of it. I was very doubtful it would, to be honest. But yeah, we had the story for, I think, three games with DLC for each, pretty much planned out. And yeah, it was all about the nature of what the Eternity Clock was, and other things throughout time and space that were similar to what the Eternity Clock was, and they were basically the kind of the pillars on which reality rested, and the engines of reality, I suppose, and if you messed around with them, then everything would start to fall apart. And yeah, that was the way it was going to go. But sadly, yeah, it didn't happen.
I've dipped into my notes again. Something else Simon Harris said was, we feel we're hitting a higher quality level than we've ever hit with a Doctor Who release before, both in terms of technology and the way it feels like a real Doctor Who episode, and the way the gameplay is integrated into that. We've got really big plans, and if this is successful, we'll get to realise those. That corroborates what you were saying there, yeah. Mm. It seems a bit of a shame. I'm looking at this as well. I did some research here. The Metacritic score for the game was 39 out of 100. Now, playing the game, as I have been, that is not a 39 out of 100 game. That is, I would say, 65, 70 at the least.
I'd give it 60.
I mean, I know that the PlayStation 3 version was buggy, I'm led to understand. And certainly in those days, I wasn't a console player, and I didn't have it. I bought it on the PC at the time through Steam, so that's how I come to have a copy of it still. And the PC version, as you'll know, came out a lot later.
Quite a lot later.
Which I guess that gave them the opportunity to iron things out. So it feels like maybe it was rushed out, or just in that respect, if it wasn't quite... if they had to then release bugs for it. I wonder if having to spend time with fixing bugs maybe had a bit of an impact on where the game went next as well.
That's hard for me to speak to. I remember the layout of the offices at Supermassive Games. There was the kind of office where we worked. Because Nick was really good. He wanted me to be involved. I was in, you know, at least a couple of times a week during production. And so the office where we all worked, where the level designers were, where Nick worked, where the art director worked, was on one side of the building. And then on the other side of the corridor, the other side of the building, I never went in there. And from what I understood, and I could be really wrong, but from what I understood, that's where the real technical nerdy stuff happened. Because when the game was, when when the development side had been done, it went over there for testing and fiddling and fixing. And so I was always aware that that's where that was happening. And I was still in the development office, if you like, moving on to work on the first downloadable content. And I do remember, you know, Nick saying, oh, we're finding lots of bugs and things like that. So I knew that kind of thing was happening, but it was happening with a separate team of people. So I don't think the fact that it was buggy, and it was, I think, by any measure, buggy. Lots of games are.
Yeah.
I don't think that had any impact on what we were planning across the corridor.
I've worked in a software company many years ago, and I know that the testing thing is a very hard, tedious job. Repeatedly trying to do the same thing in a slightly different way in order to find the bugs and then report them, and then they get fixed by someone. So it's a thankless task, really, in many ways. A game comes out in good condition, and no one thinks to even consider the fact that there would have been bugs in it at any point.
Yeah. And it's like you say, it's you can run it past QA testers as much as you like. If they don't do one particular little thing during their testing, then they may not find the bug that someone finds when it's out there in the wild. I do remember there being a lot of criticism about the bugs at release. But like I said, I play games, and that's what happens with games when they release. I know it's not a state that anyone should be particularly happy with, but it's just kind of a fact of life with that in that field.
Yeah.
But yeah, like I said, as to whether that changed anything in the development of the games themselves, I really don't feel that it did.
Do you think there would be an opportunity for the story to continue as an audio adventure with Big Finish or anything like that?
Well, you've seen how bad I am at replying to emails. I would have said they can email me anytime, but then I'd probably never see it. I'd love them to. I think on one level I'd like them to do it, but I think, I mean, it's there somewhere in the depths of my hard drive, the plan. I don't know. The reason I think I'm sounding hesitant about it is that it was. I remember the very first time I met Nick, when we were, you know, when they were considering me for the job, basically, and we were having lunch and we were talking about the kind of games we liked, and the kind of touchstones for what we considered good games, for what I considered good games, also from a point of view of the writing of those games, were things like Portal 2 and the first Portal. But I remember that we both kind of latched onto Portal as an example of really, really good writing and a really, really good game. But more than that, it kind of married those things. So would I like to see Big Finish do a Portal series? Not necessarily, because I'm not sure, if you take the game out of it, I'm not sure it is what it fundamentally is.
Sure.
Is there a Big Finish Eternity Clock possibility? I can see it, but again, you're probably asking the wrong person. I'd want to see them done as games. I'd want to see those cutscenes.
Yeah.
I'd want to see Matt Smith in that ridiculous wetsuit doing all the motion capture. I'd rather it went that way. But
okay, you just introduced something new there. I wasn't aware. Did that happen? Did Matt Smith do motion capture? Oh, wow,
yes, he did. Again, as part of Nick's keenness to have me involved at every stage, the only bit of recording I actually missed was Alex Kingston's stuff, which was done over Skype because she was in LA at the time. But Matt and a double whose name I can't remember, sorry, double, but someone was doubling for Alex. We were all at Pinewood Studios. They did it there. And yeah, he did the motion capture. In one day, he did all the kind of full body stuff on a fake TARDIS set. And then the next day, he did all the face capture stuff. It spent all day in a recording studio just with dots on his face and a camera pointed at him going through every line in the script. Matt was very involved, really. Yeah.
Oh, I didn't realize that. Oh, that's excellent.
Yeah.
Excellent.
I think it shows in the finished product. Yeah.
Yeah. I think there's a definite step up from the previous, I think at the time, the previous game, I think it was the Wii game. But then before that, there was the adventure games through that the BBC had done. Which again, I think they're quite good for what they are, very targeted at sort of a family game, but they're all Matt Smith, they're all the 11th Doctor, and I think you can see that better technology has been used. And I think what you just said, I think that kind of supports the quote I had earlier from David Harris in terms of the technology hitting a higher quality level than we've ever hit before with the Doctor Who release before, both in terms of technology and the way it feels like a real Doctor Who episode. And just that's having that motion capture in there, I think, has probably contributed to that. So I suppose the next thing to ask really is, what are you doing these days?
You sound like my mother. Not loads, to be entirely honest. To be brutally frank, I burnt out badly on Doctor Who. There were some changes at Doctor Who magazine and around that same time, and it was an opportunity for me to say, right, I'll tell you one thing. I think things started to go a bit skew-whiff when I did the preview for an episode, which was just not good. It just was not good. But you've got to, if you're doing the preview especially, you've got to sell it. I didn't enjoy doing that. I kind of stepped away from the Doctor Who stuff. And over the last few years, I suppose I've done bits and bobs for Big Finish. The most recent thing was one of their Blake Sevens, which I just loved doing those. I'm just tinkering on my own stuff, I suppose. I have a very fortunate life. My partner lets me burrow away creatively in the hopes that something will come of it.
I'd like to thank David Bailey for joining the Castovers podcast to discuss Doctor Who The Eternity Clock. And there'll be a bit more about this game elsewhere in this podcast, so I don't know why I'm saying this. So we're back to the studio. So that is pretty much all we've got to say, really, about Doctor Who The Eternity Clock. I still have it installed on my Steam Deck. It's still there to play, and I've dipped in and out a couple of times, but I've got to say, I'm still struggling to get past that one particular level and exit the starting area of the game, the Storm Cage. Look, Doctor Who games have progressed in the meantime, of course. Most notably, I should suspect, there is The Edge of Reality, which starred Jodie Whittaker and David Tennant. And given that fact, it's almost as if they knew quite a long time before the rest of us. Of course they did. But again, it hasn't blown anyone's socks off. In fact, in my opinion, and as I said in the interview there, I think really the only time Doctor Who video games, or Doctor Who in video game format, has really been a success is in the LEGO Dimensions arena, which is kind of strange, really, when you think about it. This TV show, with its huge worldwide audience, hasn't managed to create a truly awe-inspiring
I need to play this kind of game. Obviously, there's plenty of time for this to change in future, but it does make you wonder why it hasn't quite worked out just yet. Thank you very much for listening. We'll be back for a new podcast soon. Until then, it's goodbye from me.